CliffCentral.com.
Yebo. Speaking of the MKT show, which you just might have seen the promo for, they are the podcast of the week this week, Tuesday's edition of the MKT show, our recommended podcast of the week. We try to give you at least one to look at, and this week that was the show. How is Harry Kane's brother still his agent? And was this situation forced by Harry's mum upon him? This is an actual conversation they had. Are PSG going to sign Thanos next? Because who's left for them to sign? This is the kind of stuff they talk about on this show. Are Atletico Madrid set up to dominate Spanish football for the next decade? A football club in the Czech Republic apparently dropped their best player, introvert of all time. And what is the best way to get healthier? Does your girlfriend need to threaten to leave you to get you back on the right track? This is the kind of stuff that they talk about on Bolelo's show. So you need to go and listen to that podcast. Yebo. Very nice.
Sounds good.
It is good. Find the podcast on cliffcentral.com, on our app, or wherever you listen. That is the MKT show. You can also watch it live on Cliff Central Sport on the YouTube channel, which you need to sign up for immediately. Go and subscribe. Don't mess around. All right. So when our guest joins us, Leanne, just now, you'll need a piece of paper and a pen, because our mentalist is going to join us at 7:15 this morning, and we'll talk to him and hopefully have a whole lot of fun. We've also got George joining us a little bit later on. Borge from Auto Central.
Borge.
Yeah, your friend Borge. Yes, that's right.
Whose name did I get wrong before I said Borge? He was the car dealer guy.
Philip.
Phil.
Phil.
I called him Bill.
You called him Bill. And Phil will be joining us next week again, because we've still got to talk about that incredible track day that we had, which I haven't even told you all the fun things that we did on that track day. It was awesome. You're really cute, Leanne. I'm 65, so I'm too old for you, but kiss, kiss anyway, says Red Robin.
Oh, Red Robin, kiss, kiss. You're not too old for me.
Mm.
Love knows no age, right, Leanne?
No, exactly.
There we go.
I much prefer an older man anyway.
Yes. But not too old. I mean, like, what's the cutoff? Because you don't want to be a nursemaid.
Well, Red Robin would have to stay 65 for the next 10 years.
But you could start off with a great relationship together. I mean, it would certainly start that way.
Yes, no, absolutely.
Absolutely. All right.
You know what might make it easier? Maybe Red Robin has a few younger brothers, sort of, say, 58, 55. And then what happens should Red Robin reach that dreaded number? Then you just go, all right, no worries. I know what I'm dealing with.
Yeah.
Let's just plug and play.
Correct.
Let's get Red Robin 2 in the mix. Let's just.
So,
you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't want to go into a whole thing around vaccines, because every time we bring it up, we get into arguments. And I think it's unnecessary. But if you are vaccinated, apparently Discovery is going to give you vitality points that are equal to 25 days of exercise. So now we're talking motivation. I mean, that sounds like a good reason to go.
Yes. Yeah, a lot of people really rely on these Discovery points, these vitality points.
Yeah, sure.
They mean a lot.
Well, they have
and
nice rewards.
A lot
rewards
of people are with Discovery.
Yeah, of course. Okay, so you just go for your vaccine,
so yes,
and you get the bonus points.
Yes, you'll receive 2,500 vitality points.
Ka-ching.
That's the equivalent of 25 days of exercise. If you're wondering when, because you've already been vaccinated, then they'll be allocated next month in October.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to take any action. If you've been vaccinated, you'll automatically get your points.
Okay.
It's also equal to, or a little below, the value of participating in a timed race event, which comes in at 3,000 points.
All right.
And for a comparison, you get 1,000 points per year available for a consultation with a dietitian.
So, Bolelo, how do you feel about the fact that Discovery, which is basically a platform that now evaluates your physical form and your general health, how do you feel about the fact that some person who just goes and gets an injection is essentially getting the same amount of points as you do for a timed race event? That must piss you. It must piss you off, right? That must.
You put me in a tough position here, because I want. Yeah, I see what you've done here. You've done well, Gareth. It is. It does pinch me a little bit. Plus, Adrian Gore is one of my heroes, so you've really put me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have to be honest and say I do. I would like to sit across from Aidan Gord just to make him explain what him and the team were thinking. But yeah, let's stop the BS. I'm sour about it. I'm sour about it. Like, I spent all these years being at it, and then you just go and sit down and get a lollipop at the end. Bloody hell.
Yeah.
I'm going to make myself a medal saying I finished a time.
Exactly. Have your own medal cast and wear it around your neck for the show next week. That would be hilarious. Just to piss off all those people who've actually done the exercise.
I'll try and find my Nando's Chicken Run 5 kilometer run medal. And I'll do some modifications.
I'll find my 2004 702 walk the talk thing where I had to.
To be fair, I have run and completed a 10K.
Sure.
Run.
That's better than me.
At night through Joburg.
That's very good. That's better than me. Even if it took you a long time, I mean, that's a huge achievement. I mean, listen, little things like that I think are great because I know that it's hard to do. I mean, I always refer back to that ridiculous that 3 kilometer run that I did with a bunch of women in Cape Town. It was basically me against a whole bunch of ladies. Some of them were professional runners, some of them were not. But there were about, I don't know, 60 people altogether, but it was designed as an event to humiliate me, which I liked. I mean, and that's why I agreed to do it. I was like, well, you know, I'm sure that even if I have no training and even if I've done no work at all, that I could probably beat a third of these ladies. And Adidas said, oh, really, Gareth, you think so, huh? So they made an event just for me to take on, I think it was 60 or maybe a few more than that, ladies. And yes, I didn't win, but I did. I think I came 11th, which is not bad. And I was dead for half an hour after that. I couldn't breathe. 3 kilometers. I mean, Bolelo, you're laughing because for you, 3 kilometers is a brisk. That's like me going up and down the stairs at home, right? That's nothing.
It's a warm up.
Yeah. So I'm very careful about not giving credit for doing running races. That's hard work. I can feel that that you get afterwards because you're out of breath. Yeah, it's horrendous. It takes a long time to not be that huffing and puffing dragon at the end of it. Elaine,
but it's an easy way to do stuff. Just like get out there. You know, I encourage people to walk. Just walk. If you have legs, walk.
Sure.
Stop buying performance stuff as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like most people get caught up because, again, and I think Ben nailed it earlier, everyone gets caught up in what's happening on Instagram. Just put your watch down, go for a walk every day for an hour, chill out, listen to a podcast. The GCS, by the way, that can be found, cliffcentral.com, the Cliff Central app, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And
catch up on this show for now.
And like and subscribe on YouTube because we like that too. We need that. The algorithms that we were talking about earlier don't work if you don't. So just quickly, Elaine says she finds Discovery Vitality too much admin. I've never loved admin. I train my ass off and I eat healthy. There must be an easier way. I get a free coffee every now and then. That's all she says she gets out of it. Hey, their rewards are a little bit better than some of the other. You know, there's some of these things where you join up. I mean, like every shop I go to now, they ask for a rewards card, and I don't have any of those. I know people that are very disciplined about them, and they score. Like my mom was in the shop the other day, and she said,
"I do, and it's pretty good."
You do?
Mm, absolutely. I mean, I'm not religious about it. And then I'll go to Clicks, for instance, and I forget that I have all these points, and then every now and then the teller will say, you know, the bill came to 500 and they'll say, you've got 175 rand. Do you want to use it? I mean, that's a bonus.
That's very nice. I saw, my mom told me she saw this old lady who was in the shop in front of her and she got like free shopping for that day. So that's quite cool.
Mm,
yeah. Apparently some little bell went off and this little old lady who unfortunately for her, she hadn't had a full trolley, but she had a few things in her trolley and she got them for free because she's part of this rewards thing. I think that's nice.
She's like, damn, I would have got all the coconut oil.
She said exactly that. She's like, well, if I'd known I was going to win this, I would have filled my trolley to the brim, but then she would have had to pay for it if it wasn't her lucky day, right? So you never know.
Yeah.
Anyway,
they're so smart with doing that, you know, like now imagine the, even if it's just 10 people that see that.
Yeah.
You go, oh, I need a card now.
Exactly.
Like you know how we are as humans. That is so smart.
It's very clever.
Man.
And also, you know, I think it warms everybody's heart to know that some old lady managed to get a day's free shopping. I mean, even if it wasn't a lot of money. I think everybody's like, yeah, pensioner, she deserves that. That's nice. As long as people who eat right and exercise are not punished for choosing not to get the jab, is what Wendy says. That's interesting. I don't see it that way. I'm not sure how I interpret this, but they are trying very hard to persuade people to do this stuff, which always makes me a little suspicious. I think, you know, if it's...
Don't be suspicious.
But here's the thing, is if it's good for you, and it's something that we should all do to avoid having to stay in this lockdown world, then we'll all be doing it, right?
Well, they're trying to keep you out of hospital because that's where you score the most as a member. I mean, to remind you, I always get the numbers wrong, but my mum's bill from hospital was around 7 million rand. Oof. And we paid for a pair of corrective boots.
Yeah, but that was it. No, she was in for a while, though. I mean, that was really
2 years. Yeah.
No, she was. But it wasn't COVID, by the way.
But that's what they're trying to. No, that's what they're trying to do. They're keeping you out of hospital, and I'm with that.
Yeah.
I'll go with that.
Yeah.
And what's nice about them compared to NGOs is Adrian Gore's very clear. It's about the money. He's a mensch. He's not a liar. It's about the money.
Well,
like you said,
I mean,
I want my people going to work and being
absolutely
able to pay. And I love that. It's clear.
And Robert says quite rightly, incentivizing is not equal to forcing. That's absolutely true. But there are some strange incentives being thrown at people. You know, and this is also the point that Robert makes. You need to dangle a carrot in front of a dumb donkey to get it to move. That's also true. I do think that's a good point.
It is a great point. Unfortunately, I wish we could. Like you said about exercise earlier, is people will only go to a point of comfort, right? Mm. And people hate pain. So you have to force people to do the right thing more often than not. You just have to, because people stay at what I know and I feel safe.
All right.
If you had to pay me to run or to go to gym, I would do it so easily.
Really?
So easily. I would go now.
Okay. Well,
right now.
Let's think of an incentive scheme here, because that would be interesting. I mean, I don't know that there are some people you couldn't give them enough money to change the way they behave. There are lots of people who just would not change. But if you say that, Leanne, then that's a good sign, I suppose. Incentives do matter. So let's talk about the incentive of being able to read people's minds. Now, I love this. This stuff has always fascinated me on some level, because Robert Williams, our next guest, is a professional mentalist and hypnotist. He's been providing dream analysis for more than 20 years, and he joins us today live from Ireland. He's going to be showing off a few of his skills. Before that, we're going to get to know a little bit about him. Uri Geller has called him an amazing mind reader, and he's appeared on various radio and TV shows. He's with us this morning. Hey, Robert, how are you?
Good morning, Gary. Good morning, guys. And what a lovely pleasure to say hello to you all the way from Ireland to lovely Johannesburg. Good morning, everyone.
We all love the accent, so you're already our favorite person for this morning. And you're most welcome. So nice to see you. How did you start doing all this?
Thank you.
How did you start doing all this stuff, Robert?
Gareth, I've always been interested in, I suppose, what we call mystery. And from a very young age, I can remember watching programs like, and I'm sure you got it in South Africa, Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Yep.
Went on to watch programs like Arthur C. Clarke's Mysterious World. And I was always fascinated by the whole mystery attached to, I suppose, the unknown. Not that it makes much difference, because I'm not going to expand upon this. And I'm not really saying it for any other reason than to mention how it all began. But at 11 years old, myself, my brother and a friend, we witnessed something that, let's just say, Gareth, it wasn't of this world. And I think that set me on a certain trajectory.
We do want to know what this was. I mean, that sounds very mysterious. People are going to go, you can't just leave it there. What was this thing you saw at a young age that made you think it was out of this world?
Well, as I said, I'm resident to expand upon it. And the only reason being, Gareth, is because I'm in the public eye, my brother isn't. And it's something I've written about in a couple of books I've wrote. I haven't ever really mentioned the episode itself. Suffice to say, and by the way, and I think you and I would be similar in this regard, the paradox is I'm actually one of the biggest skeptics you'd ever meet. Sure. Notwithstanding the fact I do what I do, but I really do. I need a lot of convincing to anything. And as a young boy, and as I said, I really want to expand upon it. All I will say is that we were in a very old building that essentially people were still living in. It was a post-war building. And myself, my brother, and a friend, we witnessed something, like I said, that wasn't quite, at least as I could understand it, it wasn't of this world. And the interesting point was, Gareth, as the years unfolded and the decades went by, I began to think, well, perhaps that's all maybe memory confusion. I started to add details in my mind, and maybe I didn't really see what I seen.
Yeah.
So a couple of Christmas ago, I called and met my brother, and I said to him, you know, have you ever thought about that episode? He said, thought about it? He said, I haven't stopped thinking about it. I think about it quite regularly. And I said, well, can you tell me exactly what we seen? He said, why would I tell you? You were there also. So it just amused me. And you know, the interesting point, Garrett, is that what he said to me was exactly how I remember it. So I think as an adult, that was a bit more perturbing than as a child, not really knowing what to see. But like I said, I'm sorry to bring it up and not really say much more about it, other than to say to you, that set me on a particular trajectory. And I got involved in everything esoteric, from just mentalism, which is a marvelous art form, mind reading, hypnosis, dream analysis, card reading, all these things. And I suppose the one thing I would say is, and it's very important to mention, you know, Gareth, I don't take myself very serious. I take what I do quite serious. Okay. I don't take myself very serious. And I suppose coupled with that, I'm not here to convince anyone of anything other than it's very nice to talk to you all.
Well, listen,
Robert, have you considered, you considered that it was the day Bono was born and perhaps the light emitted from that immediately put on his sunglasses my God, from there.
Oh, shut up.
Well, okay. No, I'll tell you what the interesting point is this. If, or in this part of the world, if we had seen Bono in something less than a supernatural form, we would think that's an everyday occasion, because Bono, you know, Bono likes to elevate himself to that status.
Sure,
so there's nothing unusual there.
So tell me quickly, before we get into any of the actual dream analysis, what do you think it can reveal about us? Or to us about ourselves, because everybody's hugely introspective these days. Everybody's a bit self-absorbed, if you ask me. They're always trying to figure out what everything means and how they feel about it. And, you know, it's me the whole day long. So what can our dreams tell us without just satisfying our intense obsession with ourselves?
I think it's a wonderful insight, Garrett, and it's a marvelous way of putting it. And I think in many ways, obviously, the internet has been a fantastic invention, and without it, we wouldn't be talking today. But notwithstanding that, I think the point is that it also has taken away, as you said, a lot of the mystery, because people are very quickly on Google and try and find this instant gratification, answers for everything. But in terms of dreams, and it's always been my contention that in the dream process, so let's look at what happens when we dream. We go to sleep at night. This is the conscious mind. This is the reasoning mind, the one that we're all operating on. And when we go to sleep at night, the subconscious takes over. And all the subconscious essentially is, and for those of a certain age, you'll remember the video recorders and the VHS. It records everything that we witness throughout the day. And that's why it starts to symbolize in the dreams with the images and the storylines that we start to present in the dream. That starts the subconscious process of telling us exactly some little warning signs that we need to be aware of. And I suppose in many ways, apart from it being a thing about all about us, it's also the subconscious looking after us. And I'm so more or less reminding us of what we need to get done. But there is a quick aspect I want to talk about, Garrett. There's it's at least it's my belief that 85% of dreams can be explained scientifically. The mystery that was once there regarding dreams, I think, is all but eroded now. But there is an aspect to a dream that is still not explained, and it's what's called a precognitive dream. Essentially, somebody dreams of an event or of a person, and in a very relatively short period of time, that actual dream comes true. So that's still unexplained. And again,
yeah, that's
the mystery part.
That's an amazing thing, and I've experienced that. I'm sure everybody has in some way, where you've had an idea of something or you've dreamt something, and then it suddenly starts coming true, and you feel either there's been some déjà vu, as people call it, or that you've actually manifested something in reality that started in a dream.
Absolutely. I think, and this is, I suppose, why I still have a deep fascination with the dream process, is simply because of that point. And we can look back through lots of recorded history. Even, for example, if we look at the music world, it's well documented that Paul McCartney says that he dreamed of the chord orientation to the song Yesterday.
Yes.
Woke up and just put the rest of it together. But even deeper than that, Garrett, there has been many occasions. I used to have a dream and hypnosis clinic here in Ireland, and the amount of people that would come to me and tell me about dreams that they said weren't making much sense, And then the following day, or very, very shortly afterwards, that dream would actually come true exactly how they dreamt it. So it is very much an interesting aspect,
well,
I feel.
I mean, there could even be scientific explanations for these things. And some people are attempting to explain them scientifically by saying that the brain is still something we don't completely understand, but that there is some element and aspect of the brain where it has to imagine something before it can actually make that thing come true. And because essentially we're not entirely sure of how anything happens, we're not sure why people make the decisions that they do, whether it's there's a destiny or whether there's a, you know, kind of some force at work that we're not entirely aware of. Either way, the fact that human beings have great ideas and then they're able to act those out has to start with something, and it usually starts with that part of the brain that we understand the least, the part that has to do with imagination or with dreaming or with those things that we can't entirely bring down to numbers and patterns.
Again, I think it's a wonderful way of putting it, and I agree in the main on what you're saying. The one aspect though that still for me is quite unexplainable is, and you're quite right, in order for something to happen, you have to imagine it and so on. But then that brings on a broader point. If you imagine, which I've done recently, meeting somebody who I haven't seen in a very, very long time, and then literally the following day, that person appeared in a shop as I dreamt it. Well, then what does that mean? How could I create that situation where that person is going to be in that shop at that time? So, you know, it's, as I said, Garrett, and it's very nice because, as you said it earlier on, so many things today can at least try and be explained, and so many people think they've all the answers. And of course, none of us do. And that's the mystery of it. I really still find fascinating.
Can anybody develop these skills of mentalism? Because we've got a couple of friends in South Africa who do mentalism as well, and one of them has been on the show a couple of times, and I've always been very skeptical, but he's a nice guy and I don't think he means any ill, and he's tried to explain to me how he does some of these things, but I'm still not entirely sure whether it's something everybody can learn. It takes a huge amount of skill and dedication and training, and you have to practice and practice and practice, right? Or is it just something we can pick up?
You know something, Gareth, I hope you don't mind me saying this, but I heard you're a very insightful guy and that you asked the most salient questions. And so far, that's been absolutely right. And you're so right, because so many times people get the whole idea of mentalism completely confused. And it's at least my idea that you do have to have a certain skill set to perform, I would call, good mentalism. Because mentalism compared to magic, for example, a magician is all about the visual arts, whereas mentalism, when it's performed correctly, it's all got to do with the mind. It's magic of the mind, it's theater of the mind. And I do think you have to have a certain skill set in order to perform professionally, perform it well. But again, when it works, it's wonderful. And when it doesn't, well, then it doesn't.
Okay, so let's play with some of this, because people always want to see what you're talking about actually manifest in reality. So I know you sent me a letter a while ago, and I'm sorry, but our post office in this country is so useless that I didn't even get it.
Not to worry.
Okay, so you
not to worry, Gar. Listen, let's just begin. Now, by the way, let me just say a couple of things. As I said at the beginning, I'm going to try something with all three, because y'all look like three wonderful people that we can try little experiments or tests with. Okay, so don't be nervous, and remember.
All right.
If it works, it's because I'm so good. And if it doesn't work, it's because you just didn't follow instructions. Okay?
Got you. All right. Let's go.
That's the disclaimer out of the way. Right. And let's have a bit of fun. It's Friday. Let's not take any of this serious.
Sure.
But everything I've said, Gareth, is based on what's called ESP. And ESP is an acronym for extrasensory perception. Mm-hmm. Now, back in the 1930s, Joseph Ryan and Carl Zenner developed what's called ESP symbols and testing. And Gareth, I'd like you to look at this, please. They're as follows. The symbols are the wavy lines, the cross, the square, the circle, and the star. Okay. Now, if I was to say it to you just very quickly, just to name one out, which one would you say, Gareth? Just name one.
I'll take the wavy lines.
The wavy lines. Now, what I can tell you about the wavy lines is this. Anybody who chooses the wavy lines, at least in my experience, and again, this is all a bit of fun, would be people who would have a little bit of, I would call it, difficulties that they're trying to overcome in their life. But that's the same for everybody. Everybody has little bits and pieces that perhaps they want to try and overcome. But can I just ask you, before I show you this envelope and open it, when you said wavy lines, did you think it or did you hear that?
No.
In terms of when you said wavy lines.
No, I saw it. I saw it on the card you had held up. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Gary, listen, there's one envelope here. And inside the envelope, I have a little card. Okay.
Okay.
I'd like to just look at the back of it and read what that
Gareth,
says.
I will mentally send you the... Yeah. Dun, dun, dun. Wavy lines.
Okay. Not very interesting. Okay, so it's 1 out of 5, but it's not bad. And it's a good start because,
all right.
Leanne, I see you looking very nervous at me. And that's a good thing, by the way, because I'm also nervous. So let's all be nervous together. Now, let me just say very quickly that many things I've done over the years. One of the things I actually done was I used to perform some presentations for different police departments and speaking about lie tellers and people who are not being totally honest. Let me just give you a little bit of background.
You're zeroing in on our Leanne. She's completely dishonest. That's the thing everybody knows about.
Now, Leanne, that's no coincidence that there are synchronicities at work already. But one of the things you look for when you're trying to tell if somebody's telling the truth or not is obviously the facial expressions, body language. And there's little micro expressions that give us away. For example, if I was asking you a question you're not overly comfortable with, there might be a little thing hardwired inside you that'll make you just squint your eye a small bit. Or in some cases, if somebody's getting excited, the nostrils will start to enlarge. Stuff like this, if you're trained to look what you'll find. Okay, but we're going to play a little game here, Leanne, if that's okay. Now, what I would ask you is, do you have a coin or maybe a little rolled up paper ball that you could maybe just crunch up into your hand right now?
I do. Something I'll tear one out of my notebook.
Go on.
That's it, Leanne. Now, make sure it's quite small so that when it's put into the fist of your hand that we can't see it. Okay?
So scrunch it up.
So scrunch it up. Scrunch it up nicely like that. Okay, now. What I've just said is, in terms of how I would do this, if I was doing a presentation, I'd be in front of you and I would say exactly how I told what I did. But I'm going to rule all that out. I don't want to see you, okay? Because in a few moments' time, even though you're a beautiful lady, but for the purpose of this demonstration, I'm going to be using this blindfold, okay? Mm-hmm. Leanne, there's a couple of things I want to mention that are quite important here, okay? I'm going to be working only on what's called the inflection of your voice. So I'm going to be asking you a couple of questions, and I'm just going to hear your answers, and I'm going to try and base your answers on what I feel is where this particular roll of paper ball is going to go. In a few moments time, I'm going to actually put your hand behind your back. You're going to mix this piece of paper up in your hand, and we're going to take it one step further. You can leave it in your left hand, your right hand, or in fact, in your left pocket or your right pocket. Does that make sense?
Yep, absolutely.
Now, one final point I would say to make it even more test conditions and difficult for me would be this. I want you now to, in your mind, please, just in your mind, decide whether you're going to be a truth teller or a liar. Now, don't say this out loud or it makes it very easy. So in your mind, decide. I'm going to ask you two questions. You have to decide whether you're going to tell me the truth or tell me lies. Don't change out of character. So in your mind, just decide now you're going to be the truth teller or the liar. Does that make sense?
It does, and I've decided.
And again, when I ask you the questions, just answer in that particular mode and don't try and change it up because that'll give you away even quicker. All right, in a few moments, I'm going to put this blindfold on. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. You have your role in your mind. You get the piece of paper, you put it behind your back, and you put it in your left hand, your right hand, your right pocket, or your left pocket. Okay? Now, there's one request I want to make to you as all is this. It's quite serious. When I take this blindfold off, please don't still be here. Because it'd be terrible to end up talking to myself. It wouldn't be nice at all. Okay, so let me just put this blindfold on. And suddenly it's gone dark. Okay, Leanne, can you still hear me?
I can hear you.
Leanne, I'd like you to imagine, please, now this is not a question, just imagine that there's a beautiful line going through part of your body, and there's a left side and the right side. Now, remember, in the role that you're going to play, you're going to keep to this role. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. The first question I'm going to ask you, Leanne, and very quickly you can answer me, is the object on, have you put the object somewhere at this stage? Have you put the piece of paper?
Yes.
Okay, so is the object on the left side of your body?
Yes.
Okay, and is the object in one of your hands?
Yes.
Okay. Now, listen, Leanne, before I take the blindfold off, just have basically your hands cusped like this, but out of camera shot, so I can't see them when I take the blindfold off. Okay?
Okay.
Good. Okay, let me take this off. Good news, you're still here. Okay. Now, it's my job to ascertain the three places that it's not and the one place that it is. And by the way, Garrett was right. You're quite good at this. In fact, you're very good at it. Now, remember what I said at the beginning. If it works, it's because I'm good. And if it doesn't, because you didn't follow instructions. Let me just think about this. Let me do this for a minute. Okay. Leanne, both your hands are clasped like this, okay? Now, what I would ask you to do is, just very, very slowly, and out of camera shots, you've got them like this. Very, very slowly, Leanne, you're going to lift up your left hand like this for me. Lift up your left hand, okay? Put it into the camera shot.
Yeah,
and then open up your left hand, nice and wide like that. Show us your hand.
There it is.
And what's in the left hand?
Got the paper.
The paper.
Isn't that very interesting? The one thing is that, Leanne, on the claim to fame I have is that I'm the only man, I believe, who actually knows how a woman actually thinks. Isn't that very interesting?
Really?
All right. Now that's
well, I think that's so. It's quite interesting, isn't it?
That's fun.
Well, it would be.
That's fun.
Well, before we get any further, I've got one last little test to do, and then Garrett, maybe we talk a little bit about dreams. Actually, or we talk a little bit more about dreams, then we go on to the final test. I mean, much more. We've got 5-10 minutes.
Yeah, let's go for it. Sure.
Okay. This gentleman's name, please tell me how to pronounce it, because I'm certainly not going to do the justice of telling them.
Bulelo.
Sorry?
Bulelo.
Bulelo. How are you? It's very nice to see you.
I'm good. Now, listen, very nice to see you.
Now, I know you're very skeptical, but I'm very skeptical. We're all skeptical, but that's all part of living, okay? And what I would say to you is this. I feel you're very, very, and this is just saying, because it just comes to me, okay? I think, by the way, have you ever decided to, it's just a little thing that just came into my head, and this is what happens, I do card reading and so on. These things come into my head. Have you ever decided to, or have you been looking at maybe your family tree? Have you looked at your family tree or thinking about doing a family tree?
No.
I sense if you do, you're going to be quite interested, because I believe there's a relative of yours who was quite an interesting character. And that might sound like a fairly broad thing to say, but the final thing I'll say to you is this. You're a very ambitious guy who I think business-wise, you're going to do quite well for yourself. You just need to, the nervous energy sometimes gets a bit high for all of us. But notwithstanding that, let's use your wonderful imagination. What I'm going to actually do is this. You're going to imagine now I have an invisible pack of playing cards, okay? And I'm going to hand them to you. Please take them off me. Right. Excellent. Now, you're going to take the playing cards out. You're going to hold them out in a pattern like this. And you're going to see that there's black and red cards, okay? No, don't shuffle them because you need to see them, okay? So there's black and red cards. Out of the black and red cards, what are you going to hand me, the black or the red?
Black.
The black. So you got the red cards. Now, in the red cards, you have the diamonds and the hearts. What are you going to hand me, the diamonds or the hearts?
Hearts.
The hearts, you need that for the diamonds. With the diamonds, of course, you have pictures and numbers. Pictures and numbers and the diamonds. What are you going to hand me, the diamonds, the pictures or the numbers?
I'll hand you the pictures.
The pictures. So you're left now with the numbers. Now, the numbers and the diamond cards are as follows. The Jack, the Queen, and the King of Diamonds. Yes? Okay. Now, in your imagination, you're going to put these three imaginary cards on the table. The Jack, the Queen, and the King of Diamonds. Have you done that for me? Okay, there's three cards. You're going to pick two of them up. The Jack, Queen, and the King of Diamonds. Which two do you pick up?
The Jack and the Queen.
And you're leaving the King of Diamonds on the table?
Yeah.
Now, let me just give you a little bit of statistics here. There's approximately 13,504 kilometers separating you and I. The population of beautiful Johannesburg is a little less than 6 million. The population of Ireland is around 5 million. When we add that together, that's 11 million people. Oh, and you and I makes it 11 million and two. Out of those 11 million and two people, is there anybody, seriously, anybody could have known that at the end of this free process, and it was a free process, you want to leave the King of Diamonds on the table?
Not to my knowledge.
And well, not to mine neither. And I think we did it all from start to finish. And none of this is actually anything other than your choice, because I give you all the choices and that's what you decided to do. Now, I could tell you, of course, that I knew that. And you might say, well, Robert, I can see you're quite good over your previous demonstrations. But I'd like to take it one step further and actually prove it.
How?
The only way I can prove it is this. You're in your studio, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. I am.
And the card that you decided freely to leave on the table was the King of Diamonds. There's a bookshelf behind you, I believe. Isn't that correct?
It's in front of him.
Yeah.
Go.
It's in front of you. The bookshelf in front of you. Now, you're just going to sound really weird. I can't explain this. But the bookshelf in front of you, my sense of it is that there's a model car. You have a couple of model cars, isn't that correct, mm-hmm. on the bookshelf?
Yep.
Yes.
Behind one of the model cars, there's an envelope. Go over and get it, please. This is quite weird. Just come back with the envelope. This is quite weird. I mean, this is weird. I mean, this is like, this is real mystery. I mean, if you thought the first two were good, just watch this. So you've got the envelope. And what's that envelope? It's got, okay, so the envelope has a question mark on it. Now, you haven't seen the envelope before, have you?
I have not.
And up until this point, I mean, we haven't set anything up, have we?
No.
And you and I have never met. You and I have never met each other before, have we?
No.
You seem kind of pleased about that. However,
I'm not Conor McGregor.
Well, I mean, there's a fan club grown there. But let's think about this: of all the cards you could have chosen, you chose the King of Diamonds. Completely and utterly your choice. Of course, there's 13,000 kilometers separating us. For the first time, please show everybody in Cliff Central and all around the world what's inside the envelope.
All right, I feel like those unboxing dickheads.
What do you got?
What have you got?
King of Diamonds.
Amazing?
There he is.
Okay.
I mean, is that not just weird?
That's
not wild.
Surreal. That is wild.
I mean, that's just, isn't it very interesting how these things can just play? And again, it was all free choice. So, Gareth, that's a little flavor of the kind of stuff we get up to. But more interesting than not, it all was about you making that choice. So that's a little bit of the mentalism, by the way, and that's how I perform. I've hoped what you call good mentalism.
Well, I mean, a part of me, again, the skeptic has to climb in here and spoil everyone's fun.
Come in.
But
yes,
if you had already determined that the King of Diamonds was the card that you wanted in that envelope, you did, not in Bolelo. So then you just have to direct him to the King of Diamonds with your questions. So instead of saying,
well,
what's left on the table, you say, what's the stuff that you've chosen? Or, you know, so you narrow it down for him. So he eventually gets to the card that you wanted him to get to without even knowing it wasn't his choice.
Well, Gary, what I'd ask you to do, and respectfully, look back on the video and just see how Mbella made all of these choices himself. And it could only have been that he had to leave the card, that card. I mean, there's a dichotomy that's not quite right. If I have the card, well, it makes no sense to say, well, look, I have the card, but look what you have. It had to be that I had to somehow understand that he was going to decide to leave that particular card on the table to make that lovely little transition where he can go over and pick up the card right across the room. So
let me ask you something here. The dreams, because that I think is really an interesting place for us to talk. Leanne has these really, really graphic dreams. She dreams things in extraordinary detail and can remember them the next day. Some of us can't remember our dreams. Is there a different skill that those people have who can remember them? And those people who can have these very vivid dreams that can, I don't know, manifest reality and do all kinds of other interesting things. Are those people just lucky, or have they developed that skill?
No, I think in Leanne's case, in that particular case, Leanne's obviously somebody who has quite a vivid and good imagination, which is a great thing, by the way. You know, there's always this thing people will say, well, I just don't remember my dreams, I don't dream. You know, 90% of the population dream, unless you have a neurological condition to prevent you from dreaming. We all dream. But definitely, Leanne, in your case, it's certainly something that is a very vivid imagination. That's what will bring out the vibrant colours and, in many ways, the bizarre type of dreams that you may occasionally be having. And that would explain, in many ways, why these dreams are so real when you wake back up.
Yeah, absolutely. Since a child, I've been highly imaginative. To the point of distraction.
Well, that's a good thing. And I think it furthers the point that going to school, at least over here, we're always told, stop daydreaming. I think that's a terrible thing to tell anybody, because that's another process of the mind that we still don't fully understand. And as Garrett alluded to, whether you subscribe to this whole manifest and stuff or whatever, I think the whole idea of imagination is something that we should not lose, because it gives us so many opportunities.
I find it a bit disturbing that you've been sneaking around our studio all the way from Ireland and putting envelopes behind cars and things.
You want to see, Gareth, you want to see the next time I come back what I've put behind your bookshelf, but that's all for another day.
I'm just looking, I'm wondering what the hell you've hidden in there, like an old fish or something.
Something like that, yeah. So that smell is about too much. Leanne, by the way, have you considered giving up smoking yet? Or have you stopped smoking?
No. I had one 40 minutes ago.
Right, okay, well, there we go.
I'd like to give up.
Yeah, and well, the reason I say that is because Garrett mentioned with hypnosis. I would say if you really would like to give up, why not find yourself a really good hypnotist? Now, a really good hypnotist should be able to sort it out for you within, I would imagine, one or two sessions.
I tell you what, I've been before and it worked like a charm. I went to one in South Africa, and it was interesting because I had my husband with me at the time. He was just in the room, sitting at the back of the room. And went for this hypnosis, very skeptical, did not believe that it would work. And the two of us got into the car afterwards, and out of pure rebellion, we lit up a cigarette to see what would happen. And we almost vomited. We threw that cigarette out immediately. And without going for top-up sessions, that got me stopped smoking. For 10 months, I stopped smoking.
That's amazing. That's pretty
important. Until I picked one up again. But if I'd kept up with the sessions, it would have worked. And I truly and honestly say that.
Well, there's a chance to maybe do it.
Hypnotherapy, again, do all people respond equally to hypnosis?
No, and Gareth, it's again, I'm self-taught as a hypnotist. I've always believed that all hypnosis is self-hypnosis. There's so many myths attached to hypnosis that it gets quite funny after a while. But nobody can be put in a trance. And then again, what is a trance? Nobody can be put under unless they really want them. Someone like you, Garrett, who's like me, who's quite skeptical. In fact, I think all of us here have a very kind of a critical mind. In some ways, the contradiction is we are probably quite susceptible, simply because once we allow that critical faculty to just dumb down a bit, that's when a good hypnotist can get into the subconscious. And that's all that's happening. Essentially, we're getting past the reasoning part of the mind, and Leanne would know this, into the subconscious. And then you start giving them powerful suggestions like cigarettes are dirty, don't ever smoke them again. Mm-hmm. And that's how it works.
Absolutely. And, you know, I keep mentioning my clients, but I have a client in the UK, in St. Albans, who's a hypnotherapist. She focuses on, you know, anxiety, depression, overeating, binge eating, emotional eating. I can 100% say that hypnotherapy is unbelievable for this. You obviously need to want to be in that position, but it's all about getting your mind into a state where it's more receptive to replacing old ideas and habits with new ideas. And it's exercise for the brain. I think it's fantastic.
Well, you see, just on a wider point, to finish the whole thing about trance-like states or whatever you want to call it, and Garrett and everyone else, this is something we experience every day. In many ways, it could be argued that we're in a kind of a trance right now because we're all concentrating on each other. We're all paying attention to each other. The most simplest example I can give you is if you're driving to and from work, and you think about it, you can't remember anything but the drive other than when you look straight ahead. If you're watching a good movie on TV, again, that's a type of a trance. But the whole idea of trance in and of itself is suggesting somebody's just been under the complete command of a Svengali-like type of character. But again, that's all for the movies.
Well, I mean, but that is the way a lot of people feel about this stuff, right? Because they're not... Maybe they've been they're really susceptible to these kinds of things. Maybe they just want it to be true so desperately. But there are also things that are just inexplicable. There are things that we just can't explain.
Well, this is exactly how we started the conversation. And I totally agree with you, Garton. As I said, I think in some ways we would, and all of us here, as I said, we're probably all very critically minded. I'm very, very skeptical, notwithstanding the fact I've seen what I've seen over the years, that it's completely unexplainable. I've witnessed certain things. But as you said, there is absolutely no doubt in my mind, at least, that this wonderful thing we call the mind is still the most misunderstood thing we have. And the real paradox is this, and I found when I used to have a clinic, people would come and say, Robert, I'm feeling so bad. And the last place they would go to try and get help is up here. Because what is this? We can't touch it. We can't feel it. We can't hold it. But yet it's the most important thing will ever be bestowed upon us. And we just don't use it enough.
Well, listen, you're a fantastic guest, and we've had lots of fun talking to you. And we love the Irish accent, and we love Irish people here in South Africa. I hope you get a chance to visit
Thank
us.
Thank you so
sometime.
Much.
It would be good to see you.
Wouldn't it be wonderful to actually meet some then? Actually, when you may be back in your studio, get into studio, and that's where the real fun of games will begin.
we'll definitely meet up again. Yes, go ahead.
As you might say, Chucky Alar.
Slongala.
Okay.
It's been lovely speaking to you all.
Very nice.
Goodbye.
Mbulelo. Thank you so much. Nice to see you, Robert. That's Robert Williams, who is a mentalist. And he's also a hypnotist. He's been providing dream analysis and things like that for more than 20 years and joining us all the way from Ireland this morning. But now it's time to go to Johannesburg and to see George Meany, who is joining us from his... are you at home or in your office or in your studio? Or where are you, George? We can't hear you, George. I think you're muted. There it is.
Mute button. Mute button. Yes, I'm sadly at home, Gareth.
No, why do you say sadly? You want to get back to the office?
Yeah, you know, we're kind of tired of this lockdown now. From a leadership and culture point of view, lockdown is not good.
No, I agree.
You know, as a business, we've decided on a on a policy which brings people back, most of the time when lockdown lifts, because we have found that we can work like this. It is possible.
Yes.
From a cultural point of view, it is a bad thing for a business.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. We're doing currently about 1 to 2 days in the office each of us. Bulelo's obviously there every morning in Simpiwe, but I think it's really important that people are in proximity of each other if they're expected to work together. It's impossible to carry on like this. In fact, I am, to my own detriment, I'm going to be back in the studio 1 or 2 days. We'll see a week going forward, but we'll figure that out as we go. I'm just thinking it's something we need to do, even if it's just to get a different feel, a different pace, different energy going back into the show. So despite all the criticisms that have been leveled at me that I didn't take very well for doing the show from home, I think there might be a consideration that we might want to do just one or two things back in studio.
No, growth is the ability to allow the feedback to ruminate and then the output. So, hold on. Blessings to you, Gareth. That energy is the higher energy that you're holding. You're holding a higher energy.
Thank you, Bulelo. Thank you. So, George, we've got lots to talk about this morning. Let's get straight into it. George, of course, is the CEO of AutoTrader. That's the business we were talking about when I said to him, are you back in the office yet? And they do Auto Central here on Cliff Central every single week. So what do you got for us this week?
So the first story, Gareth, is a Florida man. You know, I thought potholes were only for South Africa.
Florida man. Yeah.
A Florida man. Here we go.
There are potholes in Florida, believe it or not. A Florida man got fed up with a pothole near his house. So he planted a banana tree in the pothole to warn motorists.
There it is. Look at that. A big banana tree.
It's quite a tall banana tree, yeah.
It's taller than a car. It's hilarious.
He'll miss the pothole. So he got fed up with having to put cement in this pothole all the time because the pothole just kept reappearing.
Oh, my God.
And so he decided to plant a banana tree.
Okay.
So it could be helpful in helping people avoid it. But if you're looking down for a second and you look up and you're face-to-face with a tree, it could cause an accident.
Yeah, that's a serious thing. It could,
although I think banana leaves are quite soft, right?
That's true.
Look, in South Africa, we've got people who plant ferns and lilies and all kinds of other things, water lilies. People have put all kinds of things into potholes. I think it's hilarious. What I think is even better, though, is if the local residents actually fix the pothole, which has also happened occasionally in South Africa.
Yep, and if big insurance companies get involved and decide to go on a pothole repair streak, which we've spoken about too.
And we've given them full credit for that. I think that that's one of the best things that the insurance companies have done in South Africa, and I'm proud of them for doing it.
Me too. So the next story, Gareth, is, you know, airbags. Airbags were introduced or patented in 1971.
Mm-hmm. Long time ago.
It's a long time ago. Mercedes-Benz claims to be the first car to have employed the safety device 10 years after the patent. So the 1981 S-Class Mercedes apparently had the first airbag.
Right.
So what Mercedes-Benz have done in order to celebrate the humble airbag is they've decided to recycle used airbags and make clothing out of these recycled airbags. So you can buy yourself clothing, bags, out of these recycled airbags. I'm pretty sure these things are going to become valuable because it's only out of recycled airbags. But I don't think they look very nice.
Look, here's the clothing you're talking about. It looks horrendous. Who's going to drive around in this? I mean, that's the outfit.
It looks like a hazmat suit, and those are pretty in at the moment.
Yeah,
that's true.
Not my idea of forward fashion, but who the hell am I to argue? If they say it'll save lives, they're probably people who would want to put that on. I mean, some people will do anything just to prolong their lives, you know? If you're going to walk around in that, I think it's also pretty uncomfortable. It must be very hot.
Yep.
I suppose if you want to
breathe,
you know, if you're petrified of being in an accident, you know, it's always the irony, though, that you'll put on your hazmat suit with airbags in it. And then on that day, you'll be fine. But the day you forget to put it on is the day you'll have an accident.
The thing is, you don't know black people. We're going to swag that thing out, George. We're going to get thing. You're going to see it. We're going to get the LV bag that goes across the front. We're going to have that. That's also airbag. You don't know us. And we're going to be wearing that, by the way, to a pool party. That's not just us driving. We're swagging that thing up. Plus, it's Mercedes. Yo, pushy Mercedes.
There's only one way you would wear that airbag, Gimbolela, and that's if it was a BMW.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, that's true.
Even more. That's right. Okay, very good.
And now here's an interesting story, and this is apparently true. Confirmation can't be got from Ford. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember in 1994, and I don't know why everything seems to lead to this family.
Yeah.
Okay. In 1994, there was a famous car chase, car chase of O.J. Simpson.
Oh yes.
O.J. Simpson was driving the legendary
Bronco.
Became legendary Bronco, yes, the Ford Bronco, and that car chase put O.J. Simpson's Bronco or the Bronco on the map.
Yes,
and my comment was, why does everything lead back to the Kardashians? I just don't understand it. Anyway. Ford, at the beginning of lockdown, couldn't manufacture enough cars because the silicon chip shortage started to impact them. So the new Ford Bronco, which I sent you a link for, the new Ford Bronco was suffering and is still suffering from the inability of Ford to make the numbers. So unhappy customers would express themselves to Ford dealerships. And guess what Ford has decided to do in order to appease these customers? They've decided to offer a $1,000 kitty for every car dealership to dip into to buy those unhappy customers an alcoholic beverage of their choice.
Ooh, that's going to be controversial.
And a little bit close to drinking and driving, but you know, apparently Ford has got this kitty that allows them to dip into alcoholic beverages for their customers.
I don't see a problem with that, but I think a lot of other people will. If you buy a certain car, you should. I reckon if someone threw in a great deal about like buy my car and get a gun, I'd be like, yeah, I'll buy that car just for the free gun. But some manufacturers would not be comfortable with that, obviously.
Yeah. Something. I mean, I think by and large, you know, drinking and driving are really close together there.
I thought you were going to build up to the point where you'd say to us, if you buy a Ford Bronco, you get OJ to come and visit your house and murder your wife, and you get a Kardashian as your next wife. That would be
or
a
deal. You get the other glove. Yeah, you should get the other glove with the Bronco.
If the glove does not fit, you must quit. That's right. Imagine OJ in an ad. Now, that would be brave. You see, this is where, like, I wish ad agencies or I wish companies which were advertising, yeah, that they had a bit of, let's say, chutzpah. Because if you got, hi, I'm OJ Simpson, and I made the Ford Bronco famous. I also made murder famous. If you don't buy a Bronco, I could come murder you. Now, that would be a funny ad. Would last
you know what? You're right. It's not the agencies because they've thought of that.
Sure they have.
The pitch wasn't accepted.
Well, no. I mean, there's a local chicken making company that that gets this right quite often. They should visit that company's agency.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. What else you got for us?
Sticking with Ford, sadly, Ford has decided to end its manufacturing facilities in India as it's taken a $2 billion loss in the last 10 years. Ford just can't seem to compete with the likes of Suzuki and Hyundai in India, where the market is more geared towards more cost-effective cars.
Sure. Okay, well, it's sad news for India, but maybe it means they'll bring some of it here. So India's losses may be our gain. We can only hope.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, Ford's quite popular here, especially the you know, the Ford Buckies and 4x4s and double cabs. They're very popular. I mean, they're in the top three most searched for vehicles on Auto Trader last who knows how long. So we're big Ford fans in South Africa. I don't see Ford going anywhere, to be honest.
Excellent.
From South Africa. And here's a piece of technology, Gareth. We might in the future get a rearview mirror. Now, there's a company that that has been manufacturing rearview mirrors, you know, the auto-dimming rearview mirrors. And you get rearview mirrors where you can push a button and you can program it to open your garage. Yes. This company's name is little known to be Gentix, and they manufacture rearview mirrors for many, many OEMs. But they're looking at bringing out a rear view mirror that can capture your iris. And you can imagine the possibilities if a rear view mirror can capture your iris, a biometric feature within your car.
So there's a version of it on the screen at the moment. So you would basically get into your car, and in order to start your car, it would need to recognize you. And then the internal computer would switch on and all your preferences would come up, like your music and your navigation and everything else. And your car would be able to interact with you properly. It's kind of like facial recognition in your phone.
Yeah, exactly.
Very good.
You know, so it's going to become more and more difficult over time to steal cars, to you know, to break into them, to do anything with them, because you have to have the human in order to do anything with that car.
Well, I think that's probably one of the things I love about cars at the moment is how technologically advanced they are. I mean, they're magnificent machines, whether you prefer the ICE engine or you like the electric vehicles. And then they also have these incredible systems inside them, which have just made travel a very high-tech experience. It's great. Even the cheapest car around now, George, I keep saying this, even the cheapest car around now has got more technology and more electronic and electric advancement in it than the best car 10 years ago.
Probably more than the shuttle that went to the moon.
Oh, for sure. For sure. It's fantastic.
And you know what's quite cool about that, George, is I think where it might go, even if they do hijack you, let's say, hijacking happens, is that perhaps the tech by that time will be so good that they'll see when you're startled. You know, it can pick up through your iris because we know through dilation we can pick up the sort of human state. That'd be an awesome safety feature as well. You know, not
exactly. Drinking and driving, being able to tell your state of mind, maybe.
Or if you're feeling you're feeling sleepy, like there are those cars that have the ability to kind of wake you up. You know, shudder make the steering wheel vibrate or whatever
it is.
I'm
sorry, darling. Sorry to wake you up like this, but I made the sheet shudder last night.
Just one last thing before you go, George, and before all of us get stuck into our weekend. This is a picture of Kim Jong-un at the big parade in North Korea yesterday, which of course is, you know, it's their big moment to shine. They spend about 3/4 of their budget on this big military parade to show how extremely successful they are as a country, even though people are eating their own babies in the streets because they're so hungry. Here's Kim Jong-un, though. I think Donald Trump had a tremendous influence on Kim Jong-un. He's looking tanned. He's looking fit. He's not as fat as he was. He's dressed in a nice suit. I think that we can credit Donald Trump with this. Look here. Tell me that doesn't look a little Trumpian to you.
Huh? You're actually right. Especially if you compare him. If you compare him to his hand color and his arm color.
Right. He's looking a bit orange.
Definitely gone for just the face tan.
I'm telling you, it's Donald Trump's influence on Kim Jong-un. He's westernized him. He's wearing a suit and tie. He's looking tan. This is a good influence, a long-lasting influence of the Donald Trump regime. So well done to him on that front. Let's give credit where it's due. All right, everybody. Have a happy weekend. Thank you, George. Bulelo and Leanne and I will see you on Monday morning, bright and early. Have an excellent weekend and be good. If you're not, you know what you have to do. You have to take photos. Cheers. We'll see you on Monday. Have a good time. CliffCentral.com.